First, you probably consume some form of media on a daily basis, a TV show, songs, an article online, a book you're reading. These things exist because somebody had an idea that they decided was worth the risk and time to pursue. But where do these ideas come from, and can we all add some creativity to our lives? Matt Richtel has written nonfiction, several thriller novels, a comic strip, and a children's book. He's also a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter for the New York Times. He wrote a section on how to be creative for the New York Times series, A Year of Living Better. Matt, thanks a lot for joining us today. Well, sometimes I think people think that creativity is left to the pros, the musician, the author, whatever. Do you want to make the case that we should all try to get a little more creativity in our daily lives?
Oh, I'm gonna see you and raise you, Bob. I don't need to make the case that people should. I think that they already are, and I think for the most part, it's in virtually everybody and often silenced. So, you got it in you, listener.
How is it silenced?
Well, I'm going to be accused of being too touchy-feely here. I'll do it briefly.
Go for it.
But I think it gets silenced. I think creativity gets silenced very early in life because much of civility depends on us being uniform. And so lots of rules get stepped down, and I'm a parent, and I can hear my own voice sometimes saying no to an idea that is really a form of creativity burst very childlike out of my kids. So let me put that another way. How do you get past the voice that you have inherited or internalized that says no all the time? Is that a good way to go at this?
No. Well, so talk about how we shut that voice down, though.
That's what I'm saying. I asked you a double negative. Forgive me.
That's okay.
So how do you shut that voice down? How do you hear the childlike utterances that are seedlings of creativity? Well, step back a touch. I mentioned everybody's got creativity in them. Creativity, what is it? What are we talking about here? Can I define it very broadly for a second?
Please do, yeah.
So I think of it, we're not just talking artistic. I'm talking, this is an argument for pragmatists and artists alike. This is the stuff of new businesses. It's the stuff of books. It's the stuff of songs. It's the stuff of cooking. It's the stuff of rethinking a relationship. Creativity is the stitching together in a new way of existing ideas or observations. And a lot of times, children are a nice place for it because they don't censor themselves, but they're also, you can't claim that they've got a ton of potential creativity in the moment because they don't have the experience or the ideas to synthesize. You listener, all of us have those things, but by contrast, you have begun to silence the free expression of those ideas. So, how do you silence that voice? Well, I'm going to use silence in a different way right now. There is in all of us, I mentioned these ideas, and where they appear and when they cross the horizon of our minds is often in very quiet times, and we have to be attuned to them. So, full stop at that. Does that make sense that you've got these ideas floating through your brain, but you're not necessarily paying attention to them?
Well, definitely. I think everybody has that idle daydream maybe now and then, or if only I could blank sort of concept. Is that what you're talking about?
Very good, Rob. I'm talking about that. And I want to add one piece about why we don't listen to this. So those things happen in the silence, and there are two reasons for the most part. Most of us don't listen to those, and I speak only from a lot of experience. The first reason is that silence is scary as heck. So what we tend to do is when the world gets quiet, we fill it with all kinds of things from, I know Angry Birds is old. What's the new Angry Birds? Fortnite?
Fortnite, sure, yeah.
Checking the Packers score, in my case, the San Francisco Giants, or whatever your thing is. But we fill it with busy things, and we're filling it both because there's an opportunity to fill it, but we also fill it because silence is scary, and we don't know what we're going to find there. And so the very first step in accessing your creativity is learning to live with a little bit of quiet and then watching what appears in that space. Making sense, not making sense.
Definitely making sense, Matt. I was talking to Matt Richtel about creativity, how to find it and harness it. Okay, so we make that space, Matt, and then we open ourselves up to these creative ideas. They're floating around in our brain. How do we figure out, hey, this is one I like. This is one I want to chase and put it into practice.
Totally. So this is hard for even those of us who are practiced at finding ideas everywhere. How do we decide? The first thing that I think many of your listeners already know, they might use different language than I, but this, many of them have already felt this. They're going to feel something in that silence that I think of as inspiration or muse. And what helps determine whether to pursue that are two things. One is, how strong is the inspiration or the muse? There are times when I have a book or song idea that is so overpowering, I know it's going to be unavoidable. And there are times I have an idea that feels very exciting in the moment, and I also don't know whether I'm going to have the energy to pursue it, and so I write it down somewhere. And I can't offer you a guide beyond how powerful is the inspiration. Let me just ask you, Rob, can you tell in your own life, are you able to tell the difference between an inspiration that's thrilling and one that feels pretty good, but I'm not sure?
I definitely have had both of those, and I've had the one you talked about where the idea is brilliant when you have it, and on further review, as the referees say, it's less exciting.
Yes, you can go to the booth in New York.
Exactly.
But I want to caution something about this. I'm going to add another step to this. And I mentioned there's two pieces here. The problem with going to the replay booth is that it often introduces an idea that is the mortal enemy of all creativity, whether it's business, a business idea, an artistic idea, what have you. And the mortal foe of creativity is perfectionism. And what happens when people go to the replay booth, I love your metaphor, when they start second-guessing early enough on, it is possible to second-guess every great idea that ever happened, and you can just imagine antibiotics, cars, Thunder Road by Bruce Springsteen. Somewhere along the line, any of the creators could have said, I don't know if I can really do that the right way. So I would urge people to at least apply the imperfection test and allow the idea to live under the guise that it may well be imperfect and still be great.
I want to talk about our audience here, our perceived audience, Matt. Sometimes when we're talking about a creative thing, it might be, hey, I want to write a novel. I think I've got this great idea. The world's going to love it. I'm never going to do that. I do creativity in other ways, but it might be fun for me to write a short story just to write it. Can we embrace that creativity for an audience of maybe just ourselves?
Yes, I absolutely. And in fact, I tend to think that you don't really know if you're going to like the execution part until you attempt it. And execution and creativity are not the same things. I mean, it's so tired, I'm sorry to be using it in a conversation about creativity, but there's inspiration and perspiration, and all of them are part of execution of a creative idea. And so, particularly today with the internet, where you can put things out into the world, there is no harm, shame, downside, pick your pejorative, there's no downside to trying that thing. And what you may discover along the way is that the execution is as enjoyable as the inspiration. And quite honestly, that's how you know you found your niche. It's when the inspiration, the excitement you feel over the muse, is as cool as the excitement you feel when you're doing that thing.
Okay, but I think a lot of people have probably been through that situation where they have the brilliant idea, the outcome is great, but there's that tough spot where it's hard work. Can you help us power through that?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say two things. First of all, if it's really, really painful, I'm not sure you should be doing it. And I think that there's a difference between hard and really, really painful. But let me address really, really painful for a second. I run into all kinds of people who say to me, I want to write a book, and you know, that I say, that's great. Tell me why you want to write a book. And when we really get down to why they want to write a book, it's because they want a book on the shelf. And that's very different than having the experience of writing a book or wanting to tell a story. And the people who experience the most pain in these creative processes are putting the end before the process. Does that group make sense for
Definitely.
A second?
It does.
Let me address the really practical problem of pushing through things. I think that what people can do, and there's a whole conversation we could have over the long run, but there's times and places to pick your perspiration. For instance, I know in the myriad things that I write, there's a period of the day where I am clear-headed enough to execute with a level of pleasure that doesn't turn to frustration. So probably it's going to be hard to write in, you know, your van on your coffee break at a job that takes a lot of work. You're probably going to have to find some time where the execution feels less painful. And then you will know if that's something you actually enjoy doing. But, you know, I wouldn't ask you to try any new thing under a serious stress. That would make it painful by definition.
Talking to Matt Richtel, author, cartoonist, investigative reporter for the New York Times, talking about how to be creative and embrace that creativity, generate ideas, and make them happen. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. How are you creative in leadership at work, building something, making something, writing something? Do you feel like you have that creative muse, or do you feel like you have that self-censorship process that, you know, you might have that idea and then you shut it down? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We are getting inspired to be more creative. Matt Richtel is with us, author, cartoonist, reporter for the New York Times. We're talking about where creative ideas come from and how to be more creative in our lives. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Does creativity play a role in your life? Do you wish it did play more of a role in your life? Where do your best ideas come from and how do you take them to fruition? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Brandy wrote on Facebook, "It comes on its own. It needn't be quiet or peaceful, loud or tumultuous. Sometimes it's a response to an article. Sometimes an image I see. Sometimes it's nothing in particular and an idea enters my head. This is particularly useful when I have a paper to write. The idea always comes when it wants to." So Matt, Brandy has, it sounds like, kind of learned or trained herself to be receptive to the idea whenever it chooses to make an appearance.
Yes, but I want to address something really powerful I have learned in my own life, and that I've actually had to be a little bit careful about, is that sometimes when you start to hear this muse, as Brandy, you know, evidently has, it can actually become oddly detrimental when you allow it to become a procrastination technique. And here's what I mean by it. Because execution is less exciting often than inspiration, when you find yourself in a difficult period of execution, it can yield terrific inspiration. I have had to learn over time, I'm speaking only for myself, but I suspect this is more widespread, that to exhibit some discipline when the ideas pop up while I am engaged in other tasks, or even in the quiet moments when I am engaged in other tasks, and say, that one will have to wait. Don't let the muse dupe you. She's voracious.
So how do you, okay, so I want to write something or whatever, and the idea isn't there. How can I get myself in a habit of, making that idea come?
I think yes and no. I mean, I think it's, I think ideas often can't be forced. And I will go through periods where nothing comes to mind, and I have learned to let myself be still. And let me explain one reason why that is. I mentioned earlier that we synthesize a lot of information, and then that those things tend to come together in a creative burst. It may be that you have, for want of a better word, that you've sort of run low on material, and it needs to build back up. I think you have to have faith that that will happen. The one caveat is, it's very hard to say, I want to engage in this, you know, random medium. Let's say I wanted to start a business. I'm not a business person. I couldn't just say, I'm going to wait for an idea for a business, because I'm not steeped at all in the medium that I'm thinking about. I'm not sure you can will an idea in an area about which you know very little.
I want to bring on a caller now. Bismuth is with us in Bayfield. Hi.
Hello.
What did you want to ask about?
I wanted to ask about, I guess, when you get ideas in your mind and there's, like, all these different ideas, but then they each have their, like, certain boundaries that kind of, like, guide them. And I guess I tend to look at the boundaries first rather than think about the ideas. And then that kind of, like, shuts the idea down, whether it's, like,
Can you give me a specific example?
Yes. Well, say you're thinking of a research project, and then I have all these ideas, like these methods and like what I'm doing, what I'm going to use, and then I will think about the financial like costs of that, and then that's like, oh, that's like way out of my league, or like I need to find that, and it's hard to find like funding.
I gotcha. So you work within those constraints. And I'll throw another example. Maybe a composer says, okay, I need to compose something. I don't have the budget, or I don't want to do it for a full orchestra. I'm going to do a string quartet. And then that sets you on a path, having those boundaries in place, Matt.
Yeah, or I'll give an example from my own life. I write a lot of music, but and I envision a band that I don't have total control over. And so I have to put those pieces together, and it's very limiting given that I write on keyboard. I appreciate what the caller is saying. That is a really, really good question. What do you do when your idea exceeds the scope of the resources you have? Is that a fair way to put that?
I think so, yeah.
I mean, the truth is that is a really hard and fast limitation. And so there are a couple things you can do. You could try to break that idea down into smaller ideas. And I'm going to address it in the way of research, about which I know just a touch because my wife's a doctor who does a little bit of research. But let me put it in the form of music first. For me, that has meant writing on piano, talking to some people who might be interested, working with a guitarist, eventually finding a drummer, little bit by little bit. In the way of a research project, my guess would be that each of those pieces become their own creative quests along the way. But by seeing them as a whole, it goes from staring at Base Camp 4 to looking at Everest. And you can't really get to Everest, or you can't get to the summit without getting to Base Camp 1. And in that respect, I'd say this becomes an organizational problem. Is the caller still there?
No. Off the line.
I'd wonder if that addresses him or just infuriates him.
Hopefully it helps. We're talking to Matt Richtel, talking about how to be creative. You wrote a section on that for the New York Times' Year of Living Better series. Matt, you mentioned kids earlier, and they have the creative idea. How can parents, you know, resist that urge, say, no, that's goofy, and let that creative process take wing?
I'm so glad you asked that, and it's something else I've written about. And I sometimes go talk at schools, and I use a simple exercise that I call What If. And the exercise is aimed both at the kids and the adults, and it starts by let's say you take your kids and you say, let's play a game called What If, and they get to fill in the what if. Here's the test for the parents. When the kid, as they once said to me in a kindergarten classroom, says, what if I flushed the toilet and I went to outer space? Instead of saying, well, we don't really do potty talk in school, I said, now that would blow my mind. hey, what if, and then I said to the next kid, what if you flushed the toilet, you went into outer space, and then the next kid had a what if that followed. The point of this is both to give the kids an exercise that is totally open-ended. Let them follow the string of what if, and I've gone into classrooms, and we'll write stories that follow one what if for the next, but the challenge for the parents is to stop yourself from saying that's a good idea or a bad idea. Because when that happens, you begin to wall off that voice later on in life.
Matt, we have about 30. I'm going to give you 30 seconds here. Give us an inspiration to be creative tonight.
To be creative tonight. This is a simple one I talked about, I think, with your producer. I find that the simplest way to get into this is before you go to sleep at night, at least I, and I know many other people, think about all kinds of things. We have fantasies. When I was a kid, my fantasy was, it's kind of dark, but I was protecting my family from bad guys in a hut. And I would think about that. That is a quiet moment where there's an idea. I would challenge your listeners before bed to honor the things that they think about. I don't know if it's meeting someone new or a business idea or a story they tell themselves. Just listen to that, not because that's the idea they're going to pursue, but because that's the habit of listening to yourself in a quiet moment.
We'll leave it there. Matt, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Matt Richtel, author, cartoonist, and Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter at the New York Times. He wrote the section on how to be creative for the New York Times' A Year of Living Better series. He joined us to talk about where creativity and ideas come from and to offer some inspiration, too. You can share your creativity stories still over at the Ideas Network Facebook page.